Raji, and perhaps you can tell us a little bit about what's happening there, and then we'll get to Kenya as well. We want to get both sides of this.
Yeah, thank you very much. Land tenure is still a major issue in Africa and Nigeria in particular. To an average African, the land, you know, is passed from family, generation to generation, and is precious, is held as a precious inheritance, you know. So mostly the land is held by the family units, and they tend to be small, you know. But as a solution to this problem, about 20 years ago, the government of Nigeria came up with a land reform act, you know, which vested the land, you know, in the government. You know, this has worked fairly well, but we still have a lot of problems with it. But if the focus of this forum is how do investors come in despite the problem of land tenure, I would rather want to suggest that the investors can still operate successfully using the family units, you know, as the units of production, you know, through the contractor farming system, whereby, without tampering with the land tenure system, you can still work through the families. Hold on to their land, they produce. While you come in and enrich the quality of the extension personnel and the messages that they are delivering to the farmers, and also support them with the improved technology and input, you know, in the case of livestock, for instance, improved breed of livestock, you know, and you now, they are your contractors. They produce for you, while you now take it up from there and then add value, you know, through the process of processing, agro-processing, storage, and marketing, which is really the vital issue, in Africa and Nigeria in particular. But through this, you are achieving development, you know, without destroying the social system. So at the end of the day, it will be a win-win situation. The system you meet on ground, you improve on it. The players are still active, they are not displaced, you know, and why at the same time you come in and identify your own area of value addition. Okay. And at the end of the day, everybody would be happy for it.
Dr. Abdulzak?
Issues of land, as you probably know, they're very sensitive in Africa, in Kenya in particular. At the moment, we're also looking at reforms as far as land issues are concerned. As my colleague just said, we have issues of ownership. We have the small-scale farmers who have land, but sometimes they don't own the land. It's either communal land or is a government land. And that, again, you know, if you like to invest, that becomes a challenge. Because, again, if you're looking for credit and you go to the banks, one of the things they would want is a surety or you know, evidence that you own that land. So that is still a problem. But having said all that, coming back to this issue of animal agriculture, that in Kenya, actually, in my opinion, I don't see it to be a major problem. Because I'll give an example of dairy sector. where 70-75% of the milk produced in the country is by small-scale farmers. Okay, and they probably, you know, have 2, 3, 4, 5 acres of land, but they're able to intensify the production system. So I think we need to look for ways and means of how we can be able to, you know, make a lemonade out of the lemon that we have. So this is how I look at it from other perspective. But it's still an issue, of course, we know that. And the government is actually addressing it. The issue of lease, whether you lease land for 99 years, now is still being addressed. Whether we need to cut it short to about 50 years or, you know, you have a freehold and you can do whatever you want to do. These are issues that are being discussed now, but as I've said, we can still do our business with the challenges that we have as long as we know how to go about it.
So in essence, and I suspect most of the African countries are in a similar mode, the land tenure is still a big issue, and so the small farm is going to be there with this characteristic that we've seen over centuries. But how does that get formulated into a larger mass for production so that animal agriculture can thrive to a greater degree? I think the example of the dairies, and there's other examples that can be used, but someday we'll get away from the live chicken being in the market, and there will be a different way of doing it in Africa. And it's going to help with food safety and human nutrition and a lot of other things. Following up a little bit with another question, or how are technologies introduced into Africa? And I think this is an important point and particularly involves education, not only the education of the scientists who do the research, but the education of the people that transfer the technology. Mr. Harlan, do you have some thoughts on technology transfer relative to Africa?
Yeah, it's not going very well, is it? In my limited experiences in Mozambique, I saw a lot of money, what I called the great money dump, a lot of money being wasted. Won't name names, but various intergovernmental agencies, non-governmental agencies, a lot of well-intentioned donors trying to bring everybody up in a broad area of the country at the same time, at the same level. Anyone that's worked in animal feed sales to producers is probably aware there's a concept. If you have a new idea, a new way of doing things, you don't go after every single farmer out there to try to sell it on the first day. You go after the innovators, that 1-2% of the population that are willing to take the risk, try new things. And you know what? They have neighbors. And their neighbors see the successes and the failures as they build the system. Because, you know, there's technology in academia, but then you have to apply it at the ground, you know, where the rubber hits the road or where the dirt is. I mean, you have to apply this at the farm level. So you have the innovators figure out how to make technology work at the ground level. They're being watched by their neighbors. Some of those neighbors are what we call early adopters. So that's the 10-15% of the population that say, wow, look at, man, that guy, I always keep my eye on them. Look what they're doing. I want to do that, and I want to do it now. And then, so you're always ready to market to those people. Then you have, the next step is the 60-70% of the population of producers. Are sitting around saying, you know, when they go to their meeting or whatever, they hear about this, they see this, and they start adopting it. And this takes time. Then there's a smaller fraction of the population that they're just never going to adopt it. They're probably going to go out of business. So I don't see why we shouldn't deploy this in Africa the similar way that the commercial industries around the world deploy this in their businesses. And I do not see FAO taking this approach. I think there are people at FAO and some of the other intergovernmentals that are now are realizing that the hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars spent in Africa over the decades has not accomplished much. Should probably turn off the recording device. I can't quote it. You know, but that's what my two trips to Mozambique showed me. You know, there's a lot of unintended consequences, a lot of money being wasted. Trying to do things to everybody across the board at the same time. And I just think there are better models to do that. One of the project that I'm involved in Mozambique involves a white Zimbabwean farmer that is developing an integrated poultry business. His family provides the chicks. They have the hatchery, the feed mill, the slaughter facility. And they have 300 outgrowers that raise 1,000 birds at a time. Some of them are going to move up to 500 birds at a shot. And he went into select communities around him in northern Nampula province and found those early innovators and the early adopters and got that established. And so I think you have to do it in a community, so it's not just one person in a community getting this immediate benefit. They need to develop this community of people that are adopting the technology, and so they see the benefit at the same time. So the educational role in here, this producer, this integrator, is working with TechnoServe, an NGO, Cargill, and an organization called SAFE, S-S-A-F-E, which Novus is also a member of, is supporting this. And the idea is to move this forward so that we can build this integrated poultry business in Mozambique further. You need to have that public-private partnership with, and we're going to try to bring in the intergovernmentals. I think they're willing to learn new ways, but to date, I don't think it's been that successful. To move it forward, it has to be that relationship between academia, the private sector, the NGOs, the IGOs, and the government.
Thank you, Dave. My experience has been somewhat similar in the sense that working in an academic institution, we trained a lot of PhD students out of various countries in Africa and as well as masters, but oftentimes they go back primed with lots of new ideas and things, and they go back to the same lab and the same infrastructure that was there before, and soon the technology development is not where it could be. And so there's some infrastructure issues there. The other part is transferring that technology from that research community there or internationally from other areas to the point where it can be fine-tuned so that a farmer or an agriculturalist can use it is another challenge. And I think that secondary part, the transfer of the technologies and figuring out what will be adopted and what can't be adopted and how it's going to affect, is a major issue. And I'm interested in Dave's remarks about what role private industry could have in this, particularly if they're working on the marketing chain or something else and they want to take advantage of that particular total effort in education.
Can I add one comment?
One comment.
One comment. I think one of the problems I've seen, and this cuts across what I saw in Mozambique and even developed countries, is too often we are educating students and saying, you know, this is the model, this is the technology, this is how it works, go out and implement it. We're not telling them to use their eyes, their ears, and their noses and to adjust things on the go. And I think so many times, you know, one size does not fit all. You have to be willing, when you're out in the field implementing this, to adjust, to experiment, to try different things, question the you know, everything that you learned college, I know I did, and that's so critical. But I'm really concerned today because many of the students that I run into, even when I was a student, do not question. And I hope that's different in other locations.
Mr. Belver,
one important thing we haven't talked about, or I haven't talked about, and it's very very critical to what we're saying now, is why ag students in Africa tend to finish in banks. It's very important to understand that the African governments have not, I don't know if it's the governments, I don't want to blame anybody, but agriculture in Africa has not been viewed as a profitable area of business by governments. As a matter of fact, I remember that 20 years ago, many countries in Africa were self-sufficient in cereals and even exported cereals. Nowadays, they are all importing cereals. So if you want to do a technology transfer, you need to have professionals locally that are formed sufficiently to handle the technology. And I think it's very important for governments in Africa to understand that they have to get away from this policy or this idea or this cultural stigma that quick money is better than long-term money. I think that is something that is very important for African development.
Thank you for that. I have one question and a final one we're going to ask at the panel. And I'm going to go back to our colleagues from Africa. Both of them talked about a vision plan, 2030 and 2020. We've talked about infrastructure and the fact that agriculture has to exist within the infrastructure. They both talked about industrialization as well as agricultural development. The question is, do you see industrialization as a primary focus in your 2030 program, and hopefully the results of that will help agriculture, or is agriculture a primary component and that's going to free labor forces to really do the industrialization? And I'll ask our Kenyan fellow to respond first.
This is a difficult one. Probably both. But allow me just to say something else. I'll come to that. But there's an issue of perception here. Sergio asked why they go to the banks. If you want to migrate from Africa and if you want to go to Australia, you don't see agriculture. You don't score highly, you know, if you've got qualifications in agriculture. Also, if you've graduated with an agricultural degree in our countries, you're not paid so well. It's not lucrative. It's not a college job. It's not nice to be there. And unfortunately, it's an issue of education. We need to educate the mass. I can give one example where a graduate from my university in animal production, they had a farm back home. I think it was about 4 or 5 acres of land. And the student went back home, and he was taking care of those livestock. But the father came back to me and said, "You know what, Professor, I'm looking for a job for my son." I said, "Really? I thought he told me that you have someone." Yeah, he's just at home taking care of animals. But can you please try and get him a job to do? It's an issue of perception. One. Two, perception. I forgot to tell you that I spent 2.5 years in Japan doing my postdoc. In Japan, I used to use chopsticks. In Britain, you get hold of your fork and knife. In Kenya, probably, I'm a Swahili from the coast, I use my hands. We need to have prescriptions which would fit in the situations and the conditions of that particular country or that particular region. If you come technologies, there are many technologies, but are they adaptable technologies? Are the technologies that we have originated with a bottom-up approach or up-down approach? These are some of the issues that probably we need to discuss here. And in my opinion, I think to some extent they're so-called consultants. Because I was trained by a consultant, Professor Oskov, 75-year-old, and we always agree, he says, the consultants have made a big mistake. And I always like giving an example of black and white host nutrition. It's being introduced in Kenya in an area that adequate feed resources is not there. Quality of feeds are very poor. And then after a while, another consultant, this is a breeder, he introduces black and white host nutrition, and then Professor Oskov, he tells me, he's being asked by World Bank, FAO, can you go to Kenya and fix the problem now? They need to get good quality feeds. So for Africa, we need now to wake up. We need to say, let the agenda of Africa be set by Africans, and let's assist them in setting the agenda, because they know the problems. We often leave indigenous knowledge. I once made a big mistake in the UK when I was presenting a paper in ODA. I was funded by British government and said, farmers don't know what they're doing. I said, hey, wait a minute. You want to tell us all these years these people have been starving? They know what they're doing. But what have we done in taking care of the indigenous knowledge? Is it industrialization or is it agriculture? 2 days ago, I thought probably it would be industrialization. Now I tend to think it is agriculture. that is going to drive. Because again, when I go back into this Vision 2030, we want to look for innovative, commercial-oriented activities that agriculture can be able to sort of, you know, generate all this income. And it is through that that we are going to have an industrialized nation.
Mr. Ranji.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I want to also comment on the technology transfer that we discussed earlier. I want to say that probably we have been using the wrong channel of transferring the technology and method. For instance, I commend the initiative of the management of NOVUS, you know, in giving scholarships to students to read agriculture and what have you. But I would recommend that in a place like Nigeria, for instance, through the assistance of World Bank and other donor agencies, we have well-developed extension system, you know, such that the technology, new technologies, when they are introduced, working through the research institutes and universities, you know, the technologies are reviewed, and when they have been verified to be adaptable to our situation, you know, they develop appropriate extension messages. Mm-hmm. And these, they pass through the extension officers, you know, to the farmers. And it has, the system has feedback mechanism built into it, such that regularly you at meetings with the farmers, you review the result, the outcome, and also through demonstration, you know, they give the farmers the opportunity to compare, you know, the new technology that has been adopted in the production and the whole system. And this has really improved. That is not to say that we have arrived, you know, at our destination. We still have a long way to go. I would want to recommend that such program, you know, such support, we should focus on those that are already on the job, extending, you know, technological messages to farmers. They have, in fact, by the time you expose them to the training, they are building on already acquired experience, you know, rather than, you know, students who, in my own situation, in our own situation in our country, one of the speakers earlier, you know, in the morning, mentioned that farmers are intelligent and economically rational. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same thing applies to the students. You know, now there is a boom in my country, you know, in the banking sector, and they recruit, you know, graduates from diverse backgrounds, you know, they recruit them. So, having gone through this sophisticated training in agriculture, nothing stops them as a rational, economically rational individual, you know, to go to the bank. So, I would want to suggest that we focus more on the extension workers, you know, so as to retain them and for the sustainability of the technology.
That's very good. We understand. We're running a little bit short on time. So the question was, Mr. Raji, if we're going to emphasize in your 2020 program industrialization or agriculture to drive the initial economy. Just one word.
Well, I would say
that's six.
I would say agriculture.
Great.
Agriculture, because there's limit. I mean, the absorptive capacity of the industrial sector. And of course, agriculture will feed the industry, you know, in front of raw materials. Thank you very much.
Thank you. That concludes the formal questions that we had. I think you can sense the infrastructure of the totality of the economy that is involved in agriculture, and particularly animal agriculture, and some of the small factors that we have raised, our concerns, and the opportunities But I had have to go back and agree with the speaker this morning who said that if I look around the world, with the rapid development of Asia, Africa probably has the most agricultural potential of anywhere we're looking at right now. So let's open it for a discussion, and we'll see what the questions are. And if you want to address them to a specific speaker, that's fine, or we'll handle them in a different way. Pull the mic up.
Yeah, Cargill currently does not have animal feed manufacturing in Africa. I hope that will change someday. However, if we do in a big way in Asia, and so I'll maybe talk a little bit about our Asia experiences.
Just briefly. Yeah.
We do work with government extension agents where they are available. In countries like China, where that's often limited, we put on educational programs directly to the producer. That's part of the long-term investment in that area. You're not going to recapture that immediately. To give you an idea, to date over the last 5 or 6 years, and most of these, about half of these numbers have occurred in the last year or so, we have put on training sessions where 2.5 million smallholder Chinese producers have come to and learned about our products, but also the technological reasons on why they should pay more money for our products, because they are more expensive, to achieve higher levels of productivity with their animals, whether it be their poultry, their hogs, or their cattle.
In the case of Novus, we are more, until now, we have been more targeting the poultry industry because of the range of products. So the investment, our company investment in terms of training has been more a personal, Novus personnel, me and other technical people going to African countries and training nutritionists and feed millers in terms of our products and innovations that are available to them.
Other questions back here, and then we'll go to the back. Yeah, thank you. In summary, he's commenting about the need to make sure that the local people are involved in the technology transfer effort because they understand the culture and the situation much better, and I'd have to agree with that. And the second point has to do with the water management, and particularly water quality and water availability for animal agriculture, and he's asking if there might be some folks in industry that'd be interested. I think we addressed that to a certain extent, but it's a plea that I think is very, very genuine and worthwhile. Let's go back to the back. Let's go to our Kenyan with a 2030 plan, and farm size is going to be different?
Yes, I tend to think it will be. I don't think if you're going to go and now, you know, cutting down the plots or the farms the way we do, and we would like to stop probably where we are, you know, with the little small portions that we have. But I concur that the medium size farms are more of the ones that we're going to see in future. I don't think if it is correct that we are just doing agriculture for subsistence. We produce tea and coffee. But I think, can we also be thinking about producing maize that we can consume and export? Produce adequate maize that we can use for human consumption and animal industry as well. All right? Or probably if you're going to have maize as a staple food in Kenya, then we can be able to produce other source of energy for livestock. So I think it's just a perception, because Africa also needs to produce both cash crops and subsistence and cash crop as well. But in addition to what we're producing, tea and coffee, I don't want to go to politics of tea and coffee, but it's really hot in Kenya now that you see some farmers saying that they are going to uproot their plantation, because there are very little incentives, you know, as far as that those industries are concerned. And they tend to think we better produce for our consumption, that is maize, and sell the extra, rather than producing coffee and tea that we do not dictate the prices.
What about the farm size in Nigeria? In a quick way?
My reaction simply to this is, if we are talking of development, and if Africa must develop, the development must be total. And therefore, our agriculture cannot remain.
Another question over here, then we'll go right behind him, and that probably will have to close. Yes. Yes, the question is there room for genetically modified things in Africa?
Okay. Well, there is room for feed in Africa. There is room for food in Africa. And there should, I mean, I'm sure there is room for genetically modified food in Africa, but I think it would be a mistake to use the higher yields of genetically modified feeds to have higher crops without making efforts in other areas. That's what I think.
Well, most of you are probably familiar with the Gates Foundation supporting a large program with Monsanto and CIMMYT on using improved maize lines in Africa, I think largely in Uganda. But the idea there would be that they're going to spend at least almost $50 million on this project over the next 8 or 10 years. But the first 4 years are basically going to be an educational program that's linked with the development of conventional hybrids in maize. I'm not sure they're white or yellow, but nevertheless, there's going to be an introduction with education programs. And then after the fifth year, they're going to try introducing some GMO maize, and likely going to be BT gene in it for insect control, but I'm not positive on everything that's going on. So there are some issues that are there, and it's gotten to be the point where it's cultural and it's been influenced from the outside on GMOs, and it's hard to say exactly where it will go, but I'm going to be very carefully watching this experiment that the Gates Foundation, Monsanto, CIMMYT, and some other are putting together. In the long run, well, I won't say too much more, but GMOs are important. And surprisingly now, they're coming out with some really neat genetics that will improve drought adaptation. And they can reduce the water use and so on. And as we get into food crises and grain crops particularly, water is an issue. And we're going to have to use a lot of water a lot more efficiently. One last question back here. Very good. We're really well prepared on all of this except for closing remarks. And so,
well, I want to thank you all for joining us and this morning. It's been a very stimulating conversation. I want to thank all of our panelists for contributing as well. Novus will be sponsoring a reception this evening at the Big Bar at between 6 and 7:30. So you're all invited. Please come back and continue the discussion. Now I think it's probably time for the lunch break, and the program will continue in the afternoon.